Hi, I'm Asha Tomlinson.
And I'm David Common.
And we're hosts of CBC Marketplace. We're award-winning investigative journalists that want to help you avoid clever scams, unsafe products, and sketchy services.
Our TV show has been Canada's top investigative consumer watchdog for more than 50 years, but this is our first podcast.
CBC Marketplace podcast is available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
We're trying to stay positive, but it's hard, but we're just so thankful that there are so many people who are there trying to save our community.
Forced from their homes and watching from afar, the fight against fast-moving wildfires in northern British Columbia is intensifying like the flames. High winds are pushing them closer to the community of Fort Nelson, pushing more residents out, with officials warning the next 48 hours could be volatile. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Tom Harrington. It is Monday, May 13th, coming up on 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Also on the podcast.
Everybody else, though compelling, were circumstantial evidence witnesses. He is the direct link witness.
Donald Trump's former lawyer testifying at Trump's New York hush money trial. Michael Cohen is the man who paid an adult film star to stay quiet about an alleged affair, key to the prosecution's case, but a witness the defense says can't be trusted. And it's a critical threat to wildlife. Not environmental, but criminal. The illegal wildlife trade, making billions of dollars for smugglers while harming thousands of species. It is only May, and already dozens of wildfires are burning out of control in British Columbia and elsewhere in Western Canada. The experts have been telling us, be prepared. This year will be worse than last. All that smoke, again, causing hazardous air conditions there and even in the northwest U.S. But the immediate danger are the flames closing in right now on the town of Fort Nelson. Yvette Brend is in the region tonight.
The wind's picking up now. So they're rolling in, they're setting up on everybody's houses, they're setting up sprinklers, structure protection.
Fort Nelson mechanic Ian Langstaff is among those who stayed behind despite orders to leave, clearing brush near his home.
We're going to do our best to protect our own house today.
He's keeping his property north of town soaked and his social media feed fresh with video of the empty town.
My poor backyard, taking me 22 years to make it look pretty. Took me a couple hours to destroy it.
400 kilometers south in Fort St. John, evacuees are watching social media posts like his closely. Teacher Lori Woodworth clings to her dog Luna and to hope.
You know, we started to feel a little more sick yesterday thinking about it. We're trying to stay positive, but it's hard. But we're just so thankful that there are so many people who are there trying to save our community.
But each time the wind rises, hope wavers. By daylight today, the volatile fire had grown to 53 square kilometres and crept to 3 kilometres of town. Minister of Emergency Management Bowen Ma made the situation clear.
With no precipitation, no major precipitation in the forecast ahead, winds that can pick up at any time, we are extremely concerned.
So far, winds are not as high as expected, but that could change at any time, according to Cliff Chapman of the BC Wildfire Service.
Those winds are going to be here for the next 48 hours, and it's really just about when they show up and how long they're going to last. But we are anticipating them later this morning and then to continue for the next, 1 to 2 days.
Mayor Rob Fraser has remained in Fort Nelson. He says firefighting crews and volunteers are ready to make the last stand against the flames on their own. There's no time for more help to arrive.
We're 400 kilometers from the closest town, and if the wind comes up, this will be over before anybody can get here. So we're doing what we can with everything that we've got in the community. We've got some great contractors here. They've got some excellent equipment. They're out there doing their best.
Back in Fort St. John, evacuees all wait to hear updates from the mayor.
You think of the worst-case scenario. It's hard to get that out of your mind.
Glenn Goff says he's focusing on what official sources have to say.
It's rumor mill and fear-mongering, and people just don't need that right now. They need to have that hope and not have the stress of thinking that everything is gone.
Holding tight to the hope that the wind won't turn. Yvette Brand, CBC News, Fort St. John.
Manitoba firefighters are working on multiple outbreaks around Flin Flon and the Paw, One near Flin Flon stretches more than 31,000 hectares. About 500 people have been told to leave their homes. Earl Simmons of the Manitoba Wildfire Service says he's never seen a fire move so quickly and adds it will be difficult to put out.
Usually this time of year, the soil is fairly moist and a fire will whip over the surface. Unfortunately, because we're in a drought situation, fires burn down deep, and this fire will be burning down deep. Some of the staff on scene were telling me some of the areas with great big trees were toppling over because it burnt deep into the roots, and then the trees fell over. So that requires a lot of work to extinguish, digging down into the fire and then putting water in there, a whole bunch of water.
The fire was likely started by lightning strikes. It's being fueled by high winds and drought conditions. Alberta is also keeping an eye on fires burning in the northern part of that province. The communities around Grand Prairie and Fort McMurray are on standby to evacuate. To other news now. Long awaited, highly anticipated, the star witness in Donald Trump's hush money trial finally took the stand today, day 16 of the proceedings. Michael Cohen was once Trump's personal lawyer and fixer. He arranged the payments to the adult film star to keep an alleged affair with Trump quiet. But as Chris Glover reports, Cohen's credibility opens him up to extra scrutiny.
What do you have to say?
Michael Cohen swarmed by media as he heads to court. The man who once fixed Donald Trump's problems, now a big one himself. His testimony, the heart of the prosecution's case, says former federal prosecutor Michael Zeldin.
Everybody else, though compelling, were circumstantial evidence witnesses. He is the direct link witness.
The prosecution needs Cohen to link Trump to the alleged crime, falsifying business records, all in an attempt, Cohen testified, to conceal hush money payments to keep an alleged affair with adult film star Stormy Daniels quiet.
Hi, nice seeing you. Terrific. Nice to meet you. Terrific. You know Billy Bush?
After that Access Hollywood tape surfaced in the final days of the 2016 presidential campaign, Cohen testified it was intense in Trump's orbit. He'd already become aware of a Playboy model, Karen McDougal, who had an allegation of an affair with Trump. And Cohen secretly recorded Trump talking about paying to keep that story quiet. It was played for jurors again.
And I spoke to Alan about it when it comes time for the financing, which will be...
Listen. What financing?
We'll have to pay you, so...
No.
Prosecutors using that anecdote to prove a pattern, when next, Cohen says he paid Daniels to keep quiet, at Donald Trump's urging. Trump said to me, this is a disaster, a total disaster. Women are going to hate me, Cohen told the jury, later saying Trump was appreciative. Good, good, he stated to me. Don't worry, you'll get the money back.
You plan on telling the truth?
Cohen hounded by journalists today about his integrity on the stand. The defense keen to point out he's already served jail time for crimes, including lying to Congress. Legal analyst Adam Schlahet says his credibility before the jury is key to this trial.
They just need to trust him a little bit, and they need to see how he fits in with all the other witnesses. And they have to remember that if this guy is so bad, why did Trump employ him for so long?
Mission accomplished, says former Trump operative Anthony Scaramucci, who's also broken from Trump's ranks.
You know, and Michael told a very good story today, and I think Michael's a compelling guy. And you and I both know people that have been caught in lies in the past that have reformed themselves and are speaking very directly and very factually. And I think he did that today.
Cohen is the prosecution's final major witness, and he'll be back on the stand tomorrow. The prosecution says it could wrap its case by the end of this week. Chris Glover, CBC News, New York.
Coming right up on the podcast, Memorial Day in Israel honors soldiers who have fallen in war or acts of terror. But today's was marked by protests against the Israeli government. Plus, CBC News learns the man driving the van that collided with a family near Toronto, killing four, should never have been at the wheel. Later, we bring in the new numbers on cancer in Canada, offering reasons for concern and hope. It was Memorial Day in Israel, a somber commemoration to honor those killed in war or terrorist attacks. But today's ceremonies were marked by protests over the government's handling of the war. All the while, combat is expanding, displacing thousands more civilians. Chris Brown reports from Jerusalem.
Sirens sounded for Israel's dead as the country paused to remember its victims of war and terror, especially with thoughts of those who perished at Hamas's hands on October the 7th. At Reim, the music festival site where hundreds were killed or kidnapped, people cried amidst a collage of photos of victims. And at ceremonies in Jerusalem, hostage families attended somber events, mixing with Israeli dignitaries. Sharon Shirabi's two brothers were kidnapped on October the 7th. One is now dead and the other he wants desperately home.
It's a very difficult day for all my family, for all Israeli nation. But we have hopeful that all the soldiers and the hostages will come back home.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu used the service on Mount Herzl as a rallying cry for continuing the war. It's either us, Israel, or them, the Hamas monsters, he said. But at another event, as he finished speaking, someone yelled, "Garbage, there's nothing to respect, he killed my children." Nir Galon also held up an Israeli flag with October the 7th written in red.
A lot of people in this country don't trust him to the point that I don't know what his interests are. Is he making a decision because this is his political interest or because he really cares about the people?
Israel's Memorial Day comes against a backdrop of escalating attacks from the air and ground by Israeli forces in Gaza, both in Rafah and in the central areas of the territory. Over the weekend, Israel acknowledged Hamas is making a comeback in places that had been previously subdued. Health officials claim they found 20 bodies, including children, in the rubble of a building in Jalabiya. Hanan Bargut and her family are among at least 360,000 who fled Rafah. The only place they could find to stay was a classroom in a burned-out school in Khan Yunis, the third time in 7 months her family has been displaced. "Our circumstances are difficult," she told a CBC freelancer. "We escaped from one death to another, from one place to another." Her husband, Mohammed, said Israel's military has destroyed everything around them.
"Not everyone in Gaza is Hamas. I blessing all the world. Stop the world."
Tonight, many of Israel's hostage families are demanding much the same. In Tel Aviv, they extinguish candles to demonstrate both the abandonment they say they feel from their government and their pain. Chris Brown, CBC News, Jerusalem.
CBC News has learned more about the cargo van driver at the center of a deadly, wrong-way police pursuit near Toronto. Four people, including an infant, were killed in the collision 2 weeks ago. As Thomas Daglund discovered, the driver wasn't even legally allowed to be behind the wheel.
Oh my God!
It was a police chase followed by a deadly crash that shocked Canadians.
"There's a psycho in a truck driving the wrong way."
A U-Haul van barreling down Highway 401 east of Toronto late last month, speeding the wrong way while pursued by at least 20 police vehicles. The ensuing crash killed 3-month-old Aditya Vivan and the boy's two grandparents. Now CBC News has learned more about the driver of that van being chased by officers. Court records show 21-year-old Gagandeep Singh was out on bail facing multiple criminal charges and was under a court order not to be behind the wheel.
"The heart of every single Canadian has been broken reading about that terrible, terrible accident."
Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland today highlighted the shocking nature of the tragedy. Court records show the driver had been charged this year with stealing from liquor stores and a Toronto area Home Depot, in one case allegedly using violence to make off with merchandise. In February, Singh was also charged with being in possession of a stolen vehicle. He was granted bail again the next day.
"The Honourable Leader of the Opposition."
In the House of Commons, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre recently rose to point out Singh was on bail and to blame what he described as the Prime Minister's catch-and-release laws.
"The assailant was out on bail. Will he repeal catch-and-release?"
Freeland today dismissed Poilievre's accusation.
"It is really awful to try to score cheap partisan political points off of a family's grief.
The pursuit involving Durham police in April began with another liquor store robbery. On radio communications, Ontario Provincial Police were told the suspect had targeted an off-duty officer.
Durham advising there was a male inside the LCBO. He tried to rob the store. He pulled a knife on an off-duty officer.
The police reaction was completely overboard.
Defense lawyer John Christie's firm recently represented the driver. Christie insists Singh's bail conditions were fair.
He may have been breaking them, but they were appropriate conditions, and no further conditions are appropriate.
Ontario's police watchdog is investigating that chase and deadly crash that also killed the driver. He was due back in court tomorrow. Thomas Daigle, CBC News, Toronto.
Pat King has pleaded not guilty to 9 charges related to the truck convoy protest in downtown Ottawa. Hundreds of big rigs and other vehicles rolled into the Capitol in February 2022 to protest against COVID public health measures. The demonstration paralyzed the city's downtown core for more than 2 weeks. The Crown says King presented himself as an outspoken leader of the convoy. He is charged with mischief, counseling others to commit mischief, disobeying a court order, obstructing police, and other offenses. New numbers paint a mixed picture of Canada's cancer rates. Nearly 250,000 new cases will be diagnosed this year, slightly up from last year. Around 88,000 will die from the disease, also a little bit higher. But overall, and here are the hopeful signs, case and death rates are declining. As Christine Birak tells us, how and when patients learn of their diagnosis has doctors concerned.
Cancer is still the number one cause of death in Canada. While the total number of cases and deaths is expected to rise due to a growing aging population, cancer rates are dropping.
For the individual, there's actually a lot of good news here.
Dr. Christopher Labos is a cardiologist with a degree in epidemiology.
Your likelihood of being diagnosed with cancer, especially the most common forms of cancer, is down. So you are actually at lower risk as an individual than you have ever been in the past.
Projections put the average number of deaths at 178 per 100,000 people for all cancers. That's down slightly from 180 last year.
Primary prevention is reducing our risk of cancer. So
Darren Brenner led the cancer research report. He teaches in the Department of Oncology at the University of Calgary. Brenner says anti-smoking policies are paying off and screening programs are catching more breast and colorectal cancers.
A lot of the gains that we've seen are because of effective early and efficient diagnoses of cancer. So screening, for example, works because people are diagnosed at the earliest stage they can find the disease.
But some doctors are alarmed by what they're seeing in emergency rooms.
I've never really met this person before. I may have spent only 10, 15 minutes, and now I'm giving them a life-altering diagnosis.
Kirith Graywall is an ER doctor with Sinai Health in Toronto. She wrote an editorial now published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal saying the emergency department is no place to be told you have cancer, and yet it's becoming routine. Dr. Graywall says cancers caught in the ER are often at a later stage. Patients are usually older, lower income, and have lower chances of survival. And most of them don't have a family doctor.
It's devastating for the patients. Oftentimes, if they can be sent home, they leave with a lot of uncertainties. They don't know what the next steps in care will be.
I asked the doctor I was seeing at the walk-in clinic to be my primary care physician, and she said yes.
Nicole Macrania-Paw was told she had breast cancer at 33. 2 years later, she's almost finished treatment. She credits her family doctor with acting fast, monitoring her well-being, and making all of the necessary appointments.
Would it not have been for her and the access to that doctor to get that first ultrasound? Then who knows what could have happened.
With more than 1 in 5 Canadians now saying they don't have regular access to primary care, some doctors worry any gains made in reducing cancer deaths could easily be lost. Christine Birak, CBC News, Toronto.
Arthur Irving was one of the top 10 richest people in Canada and part of a family dynasty. He also ran Canada's largest oil refinery, an integral part of the family business. Irving has died at the age of 93. He was the son of K.C. Irving, who turned a single gas station, sawmill, and general store into an industrial conglomerate. Arthur Irving became president of the company in 1972 and stepped down from the chairmanship only just last year. The company issued a statement saying he died today with his wife and daughter by his side. An organization that supports Canada's black community is facing calls for change at the top, specifically over concerns about spending. CBC News has learned the Black Business and Professional Association gave lucrative contracts to companies controlled by two directors, but didn't report some of the costs properly. Sarah McMillan has the details.
There is a legacy to protect.
Entrepreneur Angelina Williams has been a member of the Black Business and Professional Association, or BBPA, for more than 10 years. The organization offers mentorship programs and scholarships nationwide to help youth and Black business professionals with their careers. The BBPA gets funding from donations as well as grants from all three levels of government. In the last few years, that funding has grown significantly in the wake of the murder of George Floyd and the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. But some members are concerned about how those funds are being used. Internal documents obtained by CBC News show the BBPA board awarded at least $1.5 million in contracts to companies owned by two people who were leading the organization at the time. One, a board member, the other, board president and later CEO, Nadine Spencer. Both have since left.
People are often just looking for a way to tap in, to access a larger audience. So the fact that these contracts were allegedly awarded to people that are already tapped in and have access is really disappointing.
The former board members both told CBC News the contracts were approved by the board. Spencer says she has a strict conflict wall in place and was not involved in decisions to award the contracts. The association is also a registered charity, and some of those contracts were never properly reported to the Canada Revenue Agency.
I think that that's an area where donors are really interested.
Kate Bayan is with the watchdog group Charity Intelligence. She says charities can award contracts to a CEO or board member,
but it just must be disclosed, and there is no wiggle room.
Our investigation found more than $800,000 in contracts were not correctly reported to the CRA. Late last week, a lawyer representing the board said it's launching an independent review. And while that happens, the board chair and another member are temporarily stepping down. Today, one more board member has been removed from the charity's website. There are calls, even from the charity's founder, for the entire board to step down. But association members, including Angelina Williams, say the BBPA is worth fighting for.
So to see an organization with 40 years of community work going through this unfortunate event, I really hope that people would understand that the organization is bigger than any one person, and everyone will do what they need to do to make sure that it stays on top.
She hopes accountability will protect the BBPA's legacy and its future. Sarah McMillan, CBC News, Toronto.
A United Nations report is tying the illegal wildlife trade to the potential extinction of several species. It found 4,000 species are being trafficked from plants to reptiles to birds. The report says it's a $23 billion industry, mostly controlled by organized crime. But as Anand Ram learned, there are signs of progress.
Seized ivory, from whole tusks to small jewelry, rattles as it's dropped into the claw of an excavator in northeastern France. It's raised high into the sky, then tumbles down into a crusher where all 1.8 tons are pulverized. This seemingly victorious moment at the end of last year fights with the scene at Paris's Charles de Gaulle Airport earlier in the year, where slaughtered monkey and pangolin heads found in luggage were on full display to the media. The head of the terminal saying people bring these goods to sell them illegally in France or across the Union.
Wildlife crime remains a worldwide challenge.
Today, the UN released its latest World Wildlife Crime Report. In it, details from tens of thousands of seizures show a persistent problem. More than 4,000 species were affected, and not just the more recognizable ones. Yvonne Higuero is Secretary General of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species.
It is more than just the rhinos and the elephants and others that are very attractive, very iconic animals. We are showing that there are less iconic species, including plants and trees, that are severely affected by wildlife crime.
Species that include corals and crocodiles, which made up a quarter of all seizures from 2015 to 2021. That time period, the start of the pandemic, did affect data. But cross-referencing other sources of information showed a bit of good news when it comes to elephants. Angela May is Chief of Research at the UN Office on Drugs and Crime.
The supply, so the number of elephants that basically were poached, the seizures and the price. So triangulating this information really all point to a decreasing, a shrinking market of the ivory.
A sign, says the UN, that a multinational coordinated effort can have an impact to save critically endangered species from the equally coordinated organized crime that traffics them. Anand Ram, CBC News, Toronto.
We'll end with a commencement, a ceremony that took place recently at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. First up, graduating with a Bachelor of Science, Michelle Louise Aubrey.
Michilu Iabri.
Okay, our next graduate, Molly Elizabeth Camp.
Marlena Zobeth Camp.
Okay, this next one should be fine. It is Thomas Jefferson University, after all. Let's congratulate Thomas Michael Canavari Jr.
Thomas.
Okay, we better explain what happened here. It is not a health issue with the presenter. She's fine, and yes, she knows how to read. What happened, as we found out in the university's apology, was a crash course in phonetic spelling. And we mean crash. As you know, phonetics are words written out the way they sound. It's used a lot in public speaking and pro-secret on the radio. Very helpful with hard-to-pronounce words and names. Turns out, that's all the presenter was given for the ceremony, even for the common names such as Thomas. It can throw you off without a reference point. Maybe she should have gone with Tom. This has been Your World Tonight for Monday, May 13th. I'm Tom Harrington. Thanks for listening tonight. Stay safe and take care of each other.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.